Well, good morning. I'm State Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee, and I'm calling the committee to order this morning for a hearing that is being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual hearings of this type. I want to direct the attention of members of the public to our committee website, where you'll find an agenda and various materials, both about this meeting and about prior meetings as well. Before we begin, I just want to note, because my mind is on this and minds of many of you may be as well, on the situation in Ukraine, and just to say that I'm finding it hard to get my head around the idea that a country in Europe has been invaded. Foreign policy obviously is not part of the Minnesota legislature jurisdiction, but I just wanted to note that the thoughts and prayers of many people around the world are with the people of Ukraine, and I'm really glad that there's been near universal condemnation, and just say that I'm thinking about the people there and hoping that for peace in Europe and around the world. So with that, on that note, we need to get on to our business here. And so, Mr. Clerk, if you can please take the roll.
Morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, Chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, Vice Chair.
Present.
Lead Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels is excused. Representative Dabney.
Present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens present.
Representative Cotiza-Watun.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
We have a quorum. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. And then we had our meeting on February 22nd, and so asking the Vice Chair, Representative Pryor, to move approval of minutes from that meeting.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And so, members, any additions or corrections to our minutes from February 22nd? And not hearing any, all in favor of approval of those minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Not hearing any, so that motion passes and the minutes from February 22nd are approved. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. So members, I'm excited about the hearing today, and I want to give some credit, if she'll take it, to Lee Franzen for pointing my attention in this direction to shine a light on the particular needs of child care and early learning in greater Minnesota. A number of the people who are going to testify today have made the point to me that the needs in especially the rural parts of our state can look different in this area. Still very high need, as we've been hearing throughout our time as a committee, but sometimes can look a little bit different. And so I'm really happy to have us be able to shine a light on that today. We're going to hear a bill, and we're also just going to hear get a broader sense of what's going on. We're starting with a presentation. And I followed the work of Marty Werner and the Center for Rural Policy and Development for quite a while, because she did a series of reports on this. And so I'm so glad to have you with us to be able to present your work. And so if you can please identify yourself and then proceed with your presentation.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pinto. My name is Marty Werner, and I'm the Vice President of Research and Operations for the Center for Rural Policy and Development. And we're small but mighty research organization. We all work virtually around greater Minnesota. I'm here in Mankato. My coworkers are in Waldorf, Minnesota, and in New London, Minnesota. And yeah, we've been doing childcare research about 5 years now, when we were alerted to the issue, which of course has been going on much longer. And so I will start the presentation here. Okay, and I'll just put this in. Okay, does it look okay?
Yeah, it looks just fine to me, yeah, okay. Thanks.
Okay, so I just went over about us. And I think just to start, I'm going to play this video that we put out last year. I think it gives a good overview of the issues.
The challenges faced by Minnesota families after a year in a global pandemic showed us how vital childcare is to our economy. working from home was complicated by our kids going to school from home. But the search for childcare has been an issue impacting our work lives even before the pandemic. For rural Minnesotans, access to childcare has been getting worse for at least two decades. In our report, A Quiet Crisis, we showed that childcare is no longer a luxury. In almost 80% of Minnesota families, all parents work. Childcare issues are the primary cause of absenteeism among American workers. A lack of childcare keeps workers from working. But the crisis isn't the same everywhere. In Minnesota, licensed childcare comes in two forms, center-based childcare and family-based or in-home childcare. Over the last 20 years, the number of people providing family childcare has been cut nearly in half. During that time, center-based childcare has been growing, but they haven't been growing consistently across the state. Between 2000 and 2020, the seven-county metro area lost almost 40,000 family childcare spaces. Growth in centers made up for that loss, almost, by adding 37,000 spaces. However, during that same time, Greater Minnesota lost over 35,000 family childcare spaces, but the growth of center care added only about 15,000 spaces. That's a deficit of 20,000 spaces. What happened? Well, a couple of things. For one, childcare centers are harder to start up and keep going in smaller communities where there aren't as many children in the area. That's why rural areas rely so much on family providers. Second, family childcare providers have been leaving the business for a number of reasons, and the fact is, few people have been coming in to replace them. If we plot childcare on a map, we can see that childcare access is pretty sparse for most of Minnesota, in rural areas and even in urban centers. In fact, the Twin City suburbs are about the only place in the state that could be considered to have many childcare options. For two decades before the pandemic, childcare was becoming a serious challenge in Greater Minnesota. When the coronavirus came in 2020, the challenge turned into chaos. That's when everyone learned how vital childcare is to our economy. So as life starts getting back to normal, we have to make sure our current childcare system stays intact. Emergency childcare grants were a lifeline to providers and families through the pandemic. And more grants may come after a new round of federal stimulus money. Supplementing that money with special philanthropy funds from the private sector could help stabilize the childcare industry in the short term. Also, parents who lost their jobs will need help paying for childcare while they look for work or get into retraining programs for new careers. State programs like the Minnesota Family Investment Program and the Child Care Assistance Program may need to be expanded. But these are short-term fixes. How do we fix childcare for the long term? Here are a few ideas. First, we need to decide what childcare is. The way childcare is viewed right now, it's either a highly regulated private business or an underfunded public school. We have to decide which it is because what we decide will guide our solutions. Family providers are the backbone of childcare in Greater Minnesota, yet we have half the number today that we had in 2000. Family providers are still the vital core of child care in rural areas, and they need to be supported through public policy that makes it possible for them not just to survive, but to thrive. The reimbursement rates for the Child Care Assistance Program, a crucial source of revenue for providers, sat virtually frozen for 14 years while the expenses of child care continued to climb. CCAP cannot be allowed to stagnate like that again. A childcare desert premium added to the current reimbursement rate would help providers who operate in areas where it's difficult to keep a daycare going, either because the population density is too low or average incomes are too low. Finally, we need to make sure our solutions allow for creativity, flexibility, and experimentation across the state. There is no one-size-fits-all fix for this problem. Childcare solutions in Thief River Falls will look different than solutions in Inver Grove Heights. Rigid policy just ends up hurting Greater Minnesota childcare providers. For generations, childcare was viewed as a luxury. But we've seen in 2020 and 2021 just how crucial caring for our children is to our economy. As we emerge from the global pandemic, we need to tackle the childcare crisis in Greater Minnesota so the whole state can get back to work together. To learn more about child care in Greater Minnesota and other issues impacting Minnesotans outside the metro, visit ruralmn.org.
Okay, and that covered a lot of it, so we'll just go over a few more things here in the slides. So this is why family child care is so important in rural Minnesota. These numbers are from as of the year end 2020. 57% of child care capacity in Greater Minnesota is provided by or was provided by family care capacity, whereas only 23% in the Twin Cities. And I just should note that when we did our first report in 2016, you know, 5-6 years ago, this number in Greater Minnesota was actually 67%, and the number in the Twin Cities was 33%. So just in that amount of time, we've lost 10 percentage points in family child care. And so here's the economics of child care. Population density really does matter. This is a chart where we've divided up the counties by what's called the RUCA codes, the rural urban commuting areas. So this dark green line here is entirely rural. These are the entirely rural counties. And this is the change in center child care capacity from 2000 to 2020. And you can see how the capacity, how erratic the capacity is in entirely rural counties. These are our sparsest population counties, whereas the dark brown here is the metro entirely urban. So this is the seven county metro area. The blue line here is the non-metro entirely urban. So these are counties with cities like Mankato, Rochester, Sherburne County, places like that. And so you can see that these more urban groups of counties were doing okay on their center capacity growth, but not so much for the more sparsely populated counties. And that's because when you have a large enough population close enough together, providers have enough families to call upon so they can raise their rates when they feel it's necessary. And so here in rural areas, family providers work better because they have lower operating costs, lower overhead, lower startup costs, and they don't need as many, you know, paying customers to stay operating. And so the economics work better. That's why family providers have developed so much more in rural areas. But you can see that doesn't help when, for a number of reasons, providers have just decided it's time to get out of the business. And so again, non-metro, entirely urban, these are the counties like Blue Earth and Olmsted and places like that, that have more population, but are still outside the metro area, that we're doing okay. You can see that the metro area lost family providers the fastest. And then here's the table that was shown in the video here. So you can see again, 20,000 spaces lost in Greater Minnesota in 20 years. So that means that statewide, we have almost 23,000 fewer spaces now, or at the end of year end 2020, than we did in 2000. So that's, you know, we've gone backwards. And here's a chart. The one on the left is from our original report. It shows the number in percentages is the amount that their capacity would have to grow to meet the entire need. The numbers in green are their child care capacity at that time. The numbers in white are the shortfall. So you can see Northwestern, West Central, Central Minnesota, 5 years later, their need has grown quite a bit compared to the other regions. And so you can see this does vary by region too, by location around the state. And so what happened in 2020 specifically, when you look at it from the year end perspective, it doesn't look so bad. And in fact, over the last 20 years comparatively, 2020 was actually a relatively good year in terms of loss. We only lost 4,100 spaces that year. But, you know, the providers can all tell you that it was a chaotic year. It was very difficult for them to keep going. A lot of providers have told me that the grants were a lifeline that kept them going. Things would have been much worse without them. And so, you know, that was it was a mess. And so I haven't gotten 2021 data yet, but I'm assuming that it was, you know, relatively the same. And so one of the things we've talked about, you know, we know the numbers now. One of the things we've talked about doing is how do we change the narrative on this so childcare doesn't just end up, you know, neglected like it has been. The big one, I think, is to help people understand that this is a business issue, especially in greater Minnesota. The chart on the right is the trend in job vacancies, the job vacancy rate since 2005. And you can see that the dark red line is the 7-county metro. The rest of the lines are the other regions in Minnesota. And you can see that the rates are much higher. A 3% vacancy rate is considered healthy. And at the end of 2020, greater Minnesota was much higher than that. In the first two quarters of 2021, we have that data now, and it was even higher there. Some of the regions were bumping up against 10% vacancy rate. We don't know what the rest of 2021 looks like yet, but we're assuming that the trends are going to be similar. And so in a survey we did a few months ago, these were the results on the question of how often do you hear employers mentioning childcare shortage as an issue in attracting or retaining workers. This was a survey of economic developers around the state, and you can see that the largest group was once a month, but you still had 25% and a little over 15%, that's about another 40%. Saying that they were hearing from businesses weekly or multiple times a week that childcare was an issue. And in greater Minnesota, access to childcare and access to housing are the two biggest issues that are keeping businesses from finding and keeping workers. And then, like we said in the video, we need to decide what childcare is. The one thing I've learned over the last 5 years is that some people think of it as a school and think only about the need for quality education, which of course we need. But others look at it as this is a business. We have to be able to make a profit. And so we need a balance somewhere in there to make this viable or to figure out, you know, make a decision just what it is, because whichever decision we make, is going to guide policy going forward. And then in the near term, here are some barriers in particular for rural Minnesota, but these also apply in the metro area too. And so this is a money issue. And like we said, emergency grants helped providers during the pandemic, but now that we're coming out of the pandemic, the issue has and still is that revenue gap between what it costs to operate and what families can afford to pay. And when you don't have a large number of families to call upon, you don't have that pool of families where if you have to raise your rate and one of your families has to drop out because they can't afford it, another family can step in and say, oh, I can afford that. You have that in a densely populated area. You don't have that in a sparsely populated area. And then, of course, the reimbursement rates that actually is more like 16 years ago that the rates were pretty much locked in place, because that's when that started. And then child care subsidies during training. We're hearing anecdotally, and we're starting to get data in, that there's a large shift going on amongst people leaving low-wage jobs, especially in the service industry. Like restaurants and hotels and stuff. They're looking for jobs that pay better and where they have, frankly, a more reliable schedule, you know, where they can depend on, you know, control their own schedule more. And so that potentially means we're going to have a lot of people looking for skills training and retraining programs. And it's going to probably mean examining those programs and seeing some of them do come with child care subsidies like MFIP, but there is an income gap where the income may cut off, may be the cutoff for subsidies, but they may still not be making enough to be able to afford childcare. And so that needs to be looked at. And then there are other retraining programs that don't have childcare subsidies with them. And so that that needs to be looked at. And then there's the issue of letting perfect become the enemy of good in our pursuit of, you know, making sure that it's high quality, making sure that kids are staying safe. We have to be careful that we're not, you know, unintentionally excluding some populations. I think a good example of that is that many very small towns in Greater Minnesota, they have a lot of empty storefronts. That doesn't mean the town is dying. It just means that retail has evolved in that town and the economy has evolved. They have empty storefronts. They're perfect for converting into childcare, but they run up against regulations that are very exacting on how things need to be, how tall the steps need to be, and things like that in the childcare space. And it makes it very time consuming and expensive to convert those spaces. And so those are the kind of things, those unintentional consequences of sometimes of the regulations. And then we also have to be careful that we're not squeezing out initiative and creativity. The pod model and family child care is catching on, seeing more places trying that. Using alternative spaces like in schools, public schools starting their own child care, starting ones that are attached to senior living facilities and things like that, where they already have the institutional kitchen set up and things like that. And then, of course, the Sourcewell model, that's the service cooperative in North Central Minnesota, where they are contracting out to do family child care licensing with a number of counties. That's going extremely well there. And that was invented locally. That was something that was that the county officials came up with there and worked with Sourcewell and the Department of Human Services to make that work. And so child care is no longer a luxury, as we all really know now. And it's a very important economic development tool and indispensable. And so thank you, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Werner. Members, we're going to have a few testifiers after this before we move to the bill. But if there are questions for Ms. Werner right now, raise your hand. And Ms. Werner, I assume we're going to have you with us for a while yet in the hearing. Is that right?
I can stay around.
Okay, that's terrific. Good. Because what I might be inclined to do is to hear from those other testifiers. And I know I've got a few questions, but I'm kind of inclined to hear from the others as well. But members, just not seeing any hands at the moment. So I think we're going to move to our first of those testifiers. And again, members, at any point, feel free to raise your hand. But I've got Ms. Glazer as being the first person up with the Minnesota Farm Bureau, who I should say we'd also had a connection with previously and was a helpful source of the idea for this hearing. So Ms. Glazer, please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amber Glazer and I serve as the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. Our grassroots organization represents nearly 30,000 farm and ranch families in every county across the state. We advocate on policy that impacts our farms and our rural communities. While the vitality of our rural communities has long been a priority issue for Minnesota Farm Bureau, access to childcare has become an important piece of that for our members. Especially as the way we live and work has changed so drastically over the last few years, people are choosing to move to our rural communities. However, without access to reliable childcare in these communities, families are not able to make these places home. Access to childcare is absolutely a critical component of the future of rural Minnesota. As a mom of two little boys, this issue is very personal. I live in the suburbs, and when we were expecting our first child just a few years ago, one of the most stressful parts of preparing for this life-changing event was finding childcare for an infant. Thankfully, we were able to find an incredible daycare center at High Point in downtown Lakeville. But as challenging as that was, I know that as a mom in the suburbs, I had more options than the families I work with in Greater Minnesota. While access to childcare is an issue across the state, as you heard from Marnie, it looks different in our rural communities. We appreciate the work done by Marnie and the Center for Rural Policy Development, and think the research they have shared with you today highlights some of those differences across the state, specifically the reliance on in-home childcare options in our communities. On behalf of Farm Bureau members, I appreciate the committee taking the time to highlight childcare in rural Minnesota. Chair Pinto, Lead Franson, this is an issue that you've both been having great conversations on. It's very appreciated. And as we look towards solutions for families all over the state, it's important to recognize those differences do exist. Later today, you will be looking at Representative Olson's bill that will provide funding for a grant program that provides support for rural Minnesota childcare providers in whatever situation works best for that community. Our organization does support this bill as an opportunity to support those childcare providers. We recognize this is a complicated issue. How do you safely provide affordable childcare in the right numbers, yet allow those businesses to be profitable businesses? I'm thankful that a few Farm Bureau members are also with us today to share perspectives from their communities. We will all be available to answer questions as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Caitlin, Sarah, and Charity for sharing their stories.
Thank you, Ms. Glazer. We'll move on to the next testifier. Members, of course, if you have particular questions, raise your hands. I'll keep an eye out. But Ms. Keck is the next person up. And if you can please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Keck. I'm from Owatonna, Minnesota. I'm the Farm Bureau Young Farmers and Ranchers Chair of our state committee. And I'm originally from Minnesota. My husband also came from a farm family in Owatonna, and I currently work as a marketing director for an ag equipment company based out of Faribault, Minnesota. We have two small children, a 3.5-year-old and a 1-year-old, and I would echo Amber's experience that as a new mom, with your first child, one of the biggest stressors of becoming a parent is finding childcare. We had a unique situation in that my son was born prematurely, so we weren't quite sure what the medical needs would be, and deciding on childcare made that situation made deciding on childcare a little bit more difficult. He was in a daycare center. We were able to find a spot for 3 weeks after I returned to work from maternity leave, and he ended up in the PICU with RSV. So it was no longer safe for him to go back to daycare because of his breathing issues. So we took a 6-month break from daycare and kind of cobbled together a friends and family daycare plan for the next 6 months to get us through the cold and flu season because daycare center really couldn't accommodate, this was pre-pandemic, masking of teachers if they were sick and extra cleaning at that time. So we are back to that same daycare center. My kids go to Weep House in Owatonna, Minnesota. And when I was searching for childcare for my first child, I had a whole spreadsheet. I called at least 52 different places in our community. I called them all. And the Weep House was the only one that had one infant spot left when it was time for us to go to daycare. So it's not like we're a really small community. Owatonna is 25,000 people, but we do have childcare issues here. And then it seems like once you have one child, you have an in. So as soon as I was pregnant with our second child, many parents find this to be the same. They tell their daycare provider first that they're pregnant so that they can get a spot for their next child in the daycare facility or center. And then the pandemic, as kind of Marnie alluded to, really threw in a lot of chaos. So there was a lot of turnover at our daycare center and a lot of staffing issues. We never lost access to our childcare due to it, but I could tell that it was putting a strain on the workers that were there. The director and assistant director at the childcare facility, they had a cook just left the facility. They didn't tell them that they were quitting. So they were cooking for the whole facility and really having to piece things together. I will say too that with COVID, you know, kind of the unpredictability of having classrooms shut down or the whole center shut down due to COVID exposure was an added layer of chaos during the pandemic. Regulations or restrictions have changed. So now it's optional if our child is exposed to COVID to isolate. So that is nice that those have been lifted a little bit. And then not only child care for parents of children who are pre-K, but child care for school-aged children is an issue as well. I have a friend and a coworker who both lost their after-school care for kindergartners right before school started this year because their school district could not find enough people to work and staff that after-school care. And that has greatly affected mental health for parents of school-aged children that can't be home by themselves after school. Both my friend and my coworker need to work together with their husbands to figure out who's going to be home at 4 o'clock when Grace gets off the bus or when Leah gets off the bus. And it really threw a whole lot of chaos and unpredictability into their work schedules and lives too. So, yes, childcare is greatly important for, you know, new parents, parents of school-aged children that require after-school care. And I truly appreciate your attention to this matter. I really hope in the future new parents don't have to deal with the kind of stress we did becoming new parents and having to try to find that access to childcare.
Thank you so much for your testimony and for sharing your experience. We've got Ms. Vold up next, and if you can please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony. Let's get you unmuted. Let's see here.
Apologize.
Hey, there you go.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Charity Vold. I live in rural Pope County. I've been a Farm Bureau member for nearly 20 years. I've also served on that state board. My husband and his family operate a 500-cow robotic dairy herd on our home place here, and I am a licensed child care provider. I have been licensed for the last 15 years. And I'd just like to address a few of the issues we're facing from my perspective. First, I want to talk a little bit about availability. As we know, I can attest to the information in the presentation is 100% spot on. Everything talked about are things that we are experiencing here. In the last 15 years that I have been providing care, our county in Pope County here has lost half of our providers. And while we are a small county, we went from 35 providers when I was newly licensed to only 17 providers now. To put a number of spots on that, that means that we have lost over 180 childcare spots in those 15 years. Also, the information that we were looking at in the presentation you saw shows just how dire our situation is in rural Minnesota. I live in that West Central region that was circled in a, you know, high area of concern. I'm sure this is not new news to anyone, whether those losses in the workforce are due to parents leaving because they cannot find childcare. And some of those problems are that, you know, we cannot fill all of the open jobs that we have. Our lack of childcare combined with our COVID pandemic is causing some big problems. Locally, our human services office had a job opening. They had found a high quality candidate who was willing to accept the position. It turns out though that she had declined the spot because she was unable to acquire childcare in our area. I know that's not a unique story, but it continues to happen over and over again here. And businesses are still struggling to find positions for so many job openings. I want to briefly address affordability of childcare. I agree that parents need to be able to find affordable childcare, but I really want to stress that childcare providers also need to be able to make a living wage while providing that care. I have been full most of my 15 years to capacity here in Pope County, and my family still qualifies for public assistance. So I just want to stress that the numbers that we see in the headlines, the prices that are the payments that we're receiving are not the same as those in the metro. And this isn't a job that we're getting rich doing. We just want to be able to make a living wage. As a part of that, you know, in the last year and a half, my operating costs have gone up by about 60%, looking at food costs, paper products, and other supplies to provide the care that we do for the kids that we care for. That increase has been difficult, and I will attest also to the fact that the grants have been a lifeline to be able to continue to provide those things and the quality of care that we do. I do appreciate that. The rest of that increased cost is difficult to pass on to families, as we've also heard. That cost isn't something that a lot of the families that I care for can just absorb. They're also experiencing the same increases in cost in their lives as well. And pushing my costs up to cover those expenses would likely push out families. Lastly, I want to just address the topic of providers leaving the profession. I am the president of our local Child Care Provider Association, and I have been doing that for the last 15 years as well. So I am regularly in contact with other providers within my county and within our region. Our county association just met actually this last week to help our county board determine how to best use grant funding to support current providers and to attract new providers. A lot of great ideas came up during this meeting, but what we keep coming back to is licensing. Most providers felt that licensing was the most stressful part of our job. And I just want to say that's saying a lot when most of us are staying at home alone in our homes for 10 hours a day with, you know, 10 children under the age of five. But the fact that, you know, licensing is our most stressful point. In my opinion, there has been a culture shift in licensing from the time that I started until now. When I first started licensing, there seemed to be a sense of partnership and common goals with licensors and licensing. I feel that culture has shifted to primarily a culture of policy, policing, tickets, and fines. So I'd really appreciate a shift in that culture and feel. I am really excited to hear about the partnership between Sourcewell and DHS. They seem to have turned the ship around to provide support, partnership, while still monitoring the compliance of licensed family child care homes. I've talked to numerous providers who have been working with Sourcewell in their counties, and they speak very highly of their experiences with that licensing situation. So that gives me a lot of hope. We all have a common goal. We want high quality, safe, enriching environments for all of our children to learn and grow. I want to just close by saying that I love my job caring for and teaching little people. The health, safety, and education of our youngest learners at the most important times in their development is a big responsibility, and I don't take that lightly. The success of our children and our communities depend on our care. So thank you for your time.
Ms. Vold, thank you so much for your work for young kids and for your broader work working with the other people who work with young kids and making sure to take care of them. So thank you so much for that and for your testimony. Representative Wasilek, raise your hand. Representative Wasilek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, I've heard reference to Sourcewell a couple of times, and I'm wondering if Ms. Vold or Ms. Werner, I think they both mentioned it, could talk about a little bit about how they do their work. I know I'm familiar with them as someone who was on the Family Child Care Task Force that came up, but I'm wondering if maybe someone could speak to that so we have a better idea of what they're doing. Thank you.
Great point, Representative Wasilek. Yeah, I'm not sure, Ms. Werner, well, it looks like Ms. Vold is unmuted, maybe we'll go, or Ms. Werner, if Ms. Vold, you can hop in if you want to first, or yeah, we'll get, there you go.
I can speak to that just a little bit. I have not worked with Sourcewell myself. I have providers that I speak with probably weekly that are working with Sourcewell. It is a company that has been hired to do the licensing for the county, whereas licensors in each county, sort of the push down from DHS has said, your job is strictly compliance, and Sourcewell has been able to do support and a more of a partnership to help providers along, as well as maintaining that compliance. So there's been a much better relationship with the licensors who are doing that job with Sourcewell than there has been with those directly from DHS.
Let's get Ms. Werner just to provide just a little more about Sourcewell, because it's true, I think many people in the committee may not have been familiar. Ms.
Sure.
Werner, please.
Sure. The state is covered by a number of service cooperatives that assist school districts in particular with things like bulk purchasing and IT support and things like that to help them with costs. And the one in North Central Minnesota is Sourcewell. And I think it might be part of a larger national company. I'm not quite sure, but they do those services for school districts and whatnot. But a few years ago, a group of county administrators in that area got together, and they were just talking about problems they were having. And one of them said family child care licensing was a problem because they just didn't have the resources and the staffing to be able to devote the people that they needed to the licensing, to the inspections, to make it work well. And they saw it as a problem, and they talked about it more, and they decided, let's talk to Sourcewell and see what they can do. And so between the counties and Sourcewell, they came up with this idea of Sourcewell taking over the family licensing. And so Sourcewell worked very closely with DHS to make sure that it was all legal and everything was done correctly. And so now Sourcewell handles, they have people devoted just to licensing. They do the inspections and whatnot. The counties are still responsible for the enforcement and everything. But they do the licensing, they do training opportunities, they provide training opportunities, they even have a conference for family providers once a year, and they really work on making it more of an enrichment experience instead of just enforcement.
Thank you. Yeah. I want to, so Representative Laszlo, if anything further from you, doesn't look like it. Okay. And so we're going to move to Representative Damuth's question or comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the presentation so far and also hearing from the testifiers. Specifically to Ms. Bold, the point that she brought up, that licensing is the hardest part of the job. The work that we did with the Family Child Care Task Force, part of that was also to create the Office of Ombudsperson for Family Child Care. And we know specifically that was to help with licensing and compliance. I know that hasn't, or to the best of my knowledge, it hasn't been filled, but maybe, Mr. Chair, we could hear from the agency briefly just to give us a brief update of when we expect that to be done. I know that was a key point for a number of our family child care providers.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. I'm looking to see if we have someone on from DHS who would be able to answer that. I'm not positive that we do. I'll just see if somebody can unmute if you are, or somebody can let us know. But otherwise, that is a great question, and we can make sure that we get that information shared with us right away, Representative Damuth. And certainly if Ms. Mock with House Research is aware, but I suspect that she may not know either. But that is a great question. And I did want to highlight for Ms. Bold, that's true that the two questioners that you just had were the co-chair and a member of the Family Child Care Task Force, and Representative Damuth being the author of that ombudsperson bill previously as well. So Representative Damuth, I don't have anybody unmuting right now. I think we did not have somebody joining us for this particular hearing, but we will get that information and get it shared as to what the timeframe is for getting that position filled. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
That's good. Yeah, thank you. And you made that lead, Franson, calling on you. I think I hit a button and maybe unmuted, but please.
Perfect. Thank you, Chair Pinto. So my question is for Charity. And as a child care provider, you have mentioned about the wages and you qualify for public assistance. I used to do child care. I understand the costs. I was doing child care when the crash happened, so I can empathize with the situation that you are going through right now. That's probably the wages, and the increased costs. It's probably the number one thing that we hear and are hearing. I know Ms. Nancy Jost from the West Central Initiative sends the committee articles at times, and myself specifically, on the issue of wages. So if you can't raise your wages or the price that families pay for childcare because it would price them out, and governments can't, you know, will not be continuing much longer for the stabilization grants. Could you enlighten us and say what kind of ideas you have out there? Because that's, everybody talks about the low wages, but they don't give specifics on what they would like to see different that would allow for you, the business owner, to be able to, I guess, have a higher, I guess, what am I trying to say, Chair Pinto? You know, more of a higher income. I'm trying not to sound insensitive here, because it is a very serious topic and one that we hear time and time again. It's the issue of the wages, and that childcare, early childhood itself, is one of those lower wage income careers that majority of people know going into it that they're not going to get rich. But of course, I don't believe anyone on this committee wants those in the field living off of, or, you know, not living off, that's insensitive, but having to utilize public assistance here and there in order to get them over that hump. Am I saying that correctly?
I think it's clear, Representative Franson. Yeah, and so Ms. Bold, and I should note, for some of us, I think particularly Franson knows that some of us do want to continue those public payments, but of course there's discussion and debate about that. But Ms. Bold, if you can please respond, what ideas you have regarding the kind of the economic squeeze there of lifting wages. And let's get you on mute. There we go.
Yep. You know, in the meeting that I had with our county providers, our county commissioners had reached out to say, we really want to make this grant money work for our county, and we want to get it to the right places to do the most good. And the feeling, at least from our area, was that we were most appreciative of the forgivable loans. I believe our county had looked at, you know, a maximum of $15,000 per provider to help with whether that be changes to our home to make what we do easier to do from our homes, some of those larger purchases and improvements to our homes and facilities that would make our daily lives easier, and that would make it possible to do some of those things, that those were some of the parts that would be the most helpful.
Thank you. Ms. Wold, were you okay? Looks like there was.
I'm sorry. Did you have any more like specific questions on that part?
Representative Franson.
That didn't really answer my question. Forgivable loans to upgrade your house doesn't necessarily mean an increase in your wallet for the rising increases, you know, being able to have a.
Ms. Vold.
I'm sorry. From that standpoint, I just mean that if part of our operating costs can be covered through those forgivable loans, then more of the income that we are making can actually be kept that way, taking just some of the expense out of that, making more funds available. As far as increasing our wages, that it's just such a difficult thing for us to do. We don't want to push families out. I guess I don't have any specific solutions as to how to go about that.
I'll maybe just note, I think from my perspective, there really just is this economic squeeze, right? I mean, again, if you compare to the K-12 schooling system, if we didn't have public subsidies, then parents would be paying huge amounts out of their wallet. The teachers would receive poverty wages, and it'd be a giant squeeze. And that's essentially what we have for young kids. I guess I just want to verify, Ms. Bold, you were saying that those stabilization payments that you have been receiving have made a real difference. It's still, you know, still a real squeeze, but it sounds like they've been a great help this past year or a couple of years. I see you, can you unmute?
Yes, I would say that is correct. That is correct. Yeah. It has maintained us through a good chunk of this. I'm not going to say it's going to solve the problem. For a lot of people or providers, I don't know that it's enough, but it is certainly keeping us from having to close our doors.
Okay, that was certainly the idea of those payments. I'll just note, for some of us, we really would love to have some form of that be able to continue. And we'll just have to continue to discuss. And we should probably move on to the fourth testifier for this section, which is Ms. Hewitt. And if you could please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sarah Hewitt. Thank you for taking the time to hear our stories today. As a member of Le County Farm Bureau, I appreciate you allowing our voices to be a part of this conversation. I am a mom. I am a full-time employee. I am a community volunteer, a farmer, and a business owner. My husband, Mark, and I have two children, Harper, who is 6, and McCoy, who is 2, and we raise them in rural South Central Minnesota. From the time they were infants, finding affordable daycare for both my children has been one of the most challenging aspects of being a working mom. We were handed a list of providers in the county with numbers and received rejection after rejection with each phone call that we made for a newborn placement. The process was extremely frustrating, and considering all the technology that we have today, it was quite lacking. I think after the 10th or 12th call with zero openings, we actually resorted to an area Facebook group, placing a help wanted ad, if you will, for an infant opening. And through that, we were actually able to find a center with a newborn opening. With our second child, we actually had to reserve his newborn spot for him before I was even pregnant. I had paid for a spot and put a down payment down. But unfortunately for us, recently, the daycare center that we were at abruptly closed their doors with no notice. COVID definitely played a huge part into that for that specific daycare center. But the abrupt news left more than 20 children with no care and parents like myself scrambling to find care options while trying to navigate work. I found myself in an extremely stressful situation, and even my 6-year-old was like, "Mom, why does finding daycare have to be so hard and expensive for families?" It was a great question, and I didn't have an answer for her. We have since secured daycare at an in-home daycare, but we do have reduced hours with that. And now we're trying to figure out school age care for my older daughter, as most daycares fill their available spots with that 3 to 5 age range, who they can keep on full time versus the school age kids that they maybe only get in the summer. I also serve on my daughter's school board, and this is the first time the entire year that we have had the school age care program fully staffed, and our principal wasn't covering those hours. So it has been a very interesting year in childcare. The town I live in is tiny. We don't even have a population sign, yet I have seen many young families make our area home. And unfortunately, it also pits these young families against the other friends that they have in the area for the few daycare spots that even exist. And once a spot is secured, I think we all know families are paying the equivalent of a mortgage in daycare costs. We're truly thankful for the daycare providers that have opened their hearts and homes to caring for and teaching our children. As a mom, I am so thankful for that, but we also know that we need more, and our families and the economic vitality of our communities truly depend on these daycare providers. The situation as it currently stands for working families like mine is quite unsustainable. I really urge the legislature and Governor Walz to look at solutions for access to daycare for our rural communities and our working families, because our families play a key role in ensuring that our rural communities stay vibrant here in Greater Minnesota. I appreciate you taking the time to hear our concerns today as a working mom. that has had a very stressful year when it comes to daycare. So thank you again. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you, Ms. Hewitt. Thanks so much for being with us. I just have a question for Ms. Werner before we move on to the bill that we're going to be hearing, which is just about the importance of CCAP, the Child Care Assistance Program. You had emphasized that it's particularly important in rural areas of greater Minnesota. If you could just kind of expand on what you meant by that and put some give us some more detail.
Sure. Well, as you know, CCAP is the subsidy for lower income families to help them meet the rates that providers need to charge. And when the rates, or when the CCAP reimbursement rates were frozen, those rates weren't increasing. But in greater Minnesota and in, you know, in very urban parts of the metro too, where you have lower income families, those subsidies are crucial for being able to pay for childcare. And the subsidies don't go to the families. They go directly from the county to the providers. And so that's part of their income. And so for providers to not have an increase in CCAP over 14 years, that's basically being told you're not getting a raise regardless of how much the cost of living is increasing. And so that was, I think it was, I don't know for sure how big of an impact that had on the decline in the number of providers, but it had to play in because the drop-off is so distinct at that point when rates started freezing. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks. And maybe just a quick follow-up, which is that the rates even after that increase are still significantly below the median rate that's charged in a given community. Am I right in thinking that that would be a squeeze as well on those rural providers?
Yeah, I haven't looked at those rates particularly, specifically lately. I just understand that Minnesota is still below what the federal government wants to have. And so, it's gonna vary from location to location because incomes vary, you know, but in greater Minnesota, on average, we have lower incomes out here, especially in the most rural parts. We have incomes that are, you know, on average, much lower than in the metro area. Those rates are set by county, but it does make a difference because the costs for providers outside of, you know, in greater Minnesota don't vary that much from the metro area.
I can just clarify for you and for folks that, yeah, the federal standard is to be the 75th percentile of the rates in a given community. And right now we're set at the 30th percentile for most children and the 40th for infants and toddlers, as opposed to the median being the 50th. So that's what we increase the rates to. In any case, thank you very much, Ms. Werner, and to all the testifiers. And we should really move on to the bill that we have, which is House File 3169. Representative Olson's here with us. Representative Pryor, if you could please move House File 3169 to bring it before the committee. Hope we've still got you.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So moved.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I'm Representative Olson. It's so good to have you here with your great group of testifiers. If you could please present your bill, and then we'll move on to your first testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I was able to tune in and catch a bunch of that discussion, which is great. I'm excited you're doing this hearing today, Chair Pinto, and thank you for hearing the bill today. So I don't really need to go into a lot of detail about what we've heard around greater Minnesota and the child care shortage we currently have. You've heard a lot about that. And I will just add that a new child care center costs more than $1 million in capital costs to build. And often it's difficult for providers, especially in greater Minnesota, to access that capital funding. And once a provider has that capital debt, it is really difficult to generate enough revenue to cover both operating expenses and the debt service. So this bill provides $10 million from the general fund for the Greater Minnesota Child Care Facilities Capital Grant Program. The funds are available for both child care centers and providers with a family child care license. Eligible grant recipients include a city, county, or school district or joint powers board established by two cities, counties, or school districts, or a private child care provider licensed as a child care center or to provide in-home child care. Eligible projects for this grant would include acquiring land or interest in land, pre-design, design, renovate, construct, furnish, and equip facilities in which to provide childcare, or other childcare facility improvements that support the purposes of the grant program. And all projects must increase childcare capacity in the community that is served. The maximum grant would be $500,000 and would require at least a 50% non-state match. And so just a little bit about this program, that the Child Care Facilities Capital Grant Program, it was established in the 2020 bonding bill, but was not funded in that bill. So that is what this bill seeks to do, is to provide that funding. And so the grant program would have two accounts, one that could be funded through GO bonds and would be available for local government only, or the other account is funded by the general fund, is available for local governments and child care providers. And so with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. And before you do, I just need to apologize to the committee and Representative Pryor, because I was wrong. We do not have possession of this bill. And so I'm not sure if either Representative Pryor's motion that I induced her to make, suggested that she make, is a nullity or she needs to withdraw it. But either way, this is an information. I assume that you're okay withdrawing your motion.
I happily withdraw my motion. But on the other hand, I happily am listening to the bill. So I'm glad that we do have the information here. Thank you.
Very glad. Right. Thank you, Representative Pryor. And so this is informational hearing. We may end up having the bill at a later point. If we do, we would vote at that point. But for now, it's just informational. So Representative Olson, thank you. And so I think that the first testifier is Mr. McMahon. So please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of this committee, my name is Scott McMahon. I'm the Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Partnership, and it's a pleasure and an honor to be here on this committee talking about this issue today. I don't want to rehash the information that Ms. Warner shared with you, because I think she hit on a lot of the key points. But I do want to raise one critical number, and that number is 40,000. That is the number of childcare slots that we are short throughout Greater Minnesota. We need to find a way to create enough capacity to fill that gap, because those 40,000 children belong to families who are trying to figure out how to be in the best place in our workforce, how to support our business and industry, how to support our economies. And we need those workers, and we need those families in Greater Minnesota. As Ms. Warner presented, over the past 20 years, we have seen a dramatic decrease both in the metro and Greater Minnesota in the number of family care licenses throughout our communities. The Twin Cities has been fortunate that they've closed the majority of that gap through the creation of child care centers. We have not been as fortunate in Greater Minnesota. We are not going to solve this 40,000 child care slot deficit by expanding family care licenses alone. There is a role for that, but we need to figure out how to make the economies work in Greater Minnesota for larger facilities, whether they are more pod models, whether they are childcare centers. The challenge that we face in our communities, though, is that it's extremely difficult, if not impossible, to make the financing of childcare centers work. Because in order for the business model to be sustainable, from research that we've had before this committee in past years, we know that size facility needs to be about 90 kids or bigger in order to generate enough revenue to cover the capital costs, the operating costs, and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, in Greater Minnesota, what we need are facilities more in the 40 to 80 range as our primary solution to these problems. And so what this program would do is provide some funding and put another tool in our toolbox to address this problem, to help us figure out the financing side of making these new childcare facilities a reality in our communities. I've talked to too many childcare providers or communities who have looked at creating new childcare facilities. And what I'm told consistently is we can pay our operating expenses or we can pay our capital costs, but we can't figure out a business model that works for both of them. So this tool coming into a community would allow for that finance to come into play. It would help stimulate local resources to come to the table with the match requirement. And we've seen success in these opportunities. You know, there's a new YMCA childcare facility in Spicer that benefited from a deep economic development grant as part of their development. We've seen a similar situation in Kanabec County in the city of Mora. So we know that this model works. Currently, I can rattle off a number of communities who are in process of thinking strategically about how these types of dollars could benefit them. We have seen examples of nursing homes looking at converting spaces. I'm in conversation with one community that has a adults with disabilities facility that has no longer has tenants in it, that they'd like to convert that facility into a childcare space. Community that has a developer looking at their community to develop a new multifamily workforce housing facility that they'd like to have a daycare attached to that space. So there's a lot of innovation happening in our communities, but in all these situations, they can't make the numbers line up to make the projects fully work. So if we had this program and these dollars available, we would have a multitude of projects that could go forward. Our remaining two testifiers today, I just want to highlight the reality that we're experiencing in Otter Tail County. Otter Tail County is the 17th largest county in the state of Minnesota. So it's, you know, the 10th largest in greater Minnesota. It has one fully operational childcare center in the entire county. One center that is serving infants through school age kids. This is the reality that we're facing in our communities, you know, when we look at these types of numbers. And so what you'll hear from Otter Tail County is from both the county and the provider standpoint, what could happen if a tool like this was available in the community? What could happen with the expansion of childcare, the impact on the businesses, the impact on the families? So with that, I'm happy to turn it over to our other two testifiers and answer any questions once they are done.
Thank you so much, Mr. McMahon. Thanks for your longtime leadership in this area. I actually have three individuals listed, so I'm not sure who, I mean, maybe Mr. McMahon, you can tell me who the two folks are because I'll know how to call on them.
If we can go to Amy Baldwin with Otter Tail County and then Sue Stofke with the Child Care Center.
Perfect. So Ms. Baldwin, we'll have you go. If you please identify yourself, we'll go from there.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Amy Baldwin, I'm the Otter Tail County Community Development Director. And we have been working for many years, you know, pre-pandemic, you know, in trying to address the child care challenges and doing so collectively. We know that it isn't a model that currently works from a private business perspective, that there are, you know, the gaps and the challenges that have been talked about already today. So we have been working collectively to address workforce challenges, which certainly include childcare, housing, all of the inputs. You know, they're complex challenges that don't have simple one-size-fits-all solutions. And that's the approach that we've taken. And we have had some success. We still have great need when it comes to childcare. Connecting it back to our workforce needs, you know, we were at a point where we had more than one job opening than job seekers before the pandemic. And that has only been exacerbated with folks not being as participatory in the workforce for various reasons, but one of which that we know in talking to our employers, talking to our families, that it is the availability, the stability, and the affordability of childcare that is preventing them from participating in the workforce. As we look at what we can do from our county, our county board has dedicated a portion of its American Rescue Plan recovery dollars towards child care, both ensuring stability of our existing providers and making sure that they are staying in the marketplace and continuing to provide critical child care capacity, but also how do we work to expand that capacity to meet the needs of families and in alignment with what our workforce needs are as well. So highly engaged with our employers and thinking about what role they might play, and they want to be at the table. They are at the table, but it isn't a role that they can solely play on their own. And in particular, this bill and this funding would provide another layer of collaboration and partnership. We are willing to put resources towards solutions. Our employers are willing to put resource solutions. We have those facilities that could be renovated and converted or expanded into additional child care capacity here in the county. We have a number of those examples that we are working towards. You know, what could that look like? Understanding the numbers, and the numbers are a lot. You know, we know what's happened with construction pricing and availability of labor, and that impacts, you know, the numbers for conversion or construction of new space as well. So we are, you know, strongly supporting this bill from Otter Tail County's perspective, and do want to know that we would be at the table as a match partner and providing capacity and technical support to towards solutions that will help meet the needs of our workforce today and into the future. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Ms. Baldwin. Thanks for being with us and for your important work. We've got Ms. Stafke next. If you can please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Chair Pinto. I appreciate the opportunity to present today to you and the rest of the committee. So thank you for having me. My name is Susan Tenike Stafke. I'm speaking today on behalf of being the only one child care center that was mentioned by Scott McMahon this morning. I'm the executive director. And just a little bit of background. So my career actually is about a 34-year career in education. Within the 34 years, I've spent 30 years actually as a faculty in higher education, teaching and training early childhood professionals. Also within the 34 years, the last 16 years, I've been the executive director of this child care center located in Fergus Falls. What's unique about Children's Corner is the fact that we actually have two locations within Otter Tail County. I have one location that we manage in Fergus Falls and the other one in Pahrump, Minnesota. Both facilities are Children's Corner, but they are 45 miles apart. So we are able to serve members within Otter Tail County at kind of both ends of that county. What we've done over the last couple of years in response to the need for additional childcare is we have done some expansion ourselves. And I'm here to share with you that story about our expansion and kind of the pitfalls of things that we've had to go through in order to get there. So Children's Corner has been in existence and providing care for 51 years. That is a great length of time and very unusual to hear for childcare centers to be available and open for that many years. We are a nonprofit. As I always say, we're here for the mission and not the money. At the same time, we still have to make a living wage. I have to pay my staff, and we have to remain open, and our doors have to stay open. So when the call came from Otter Tail County in the need for more additional child care, I attended about every single meeting that there ever was within those communities to try to help solve that problem. One of the things that we did recently is Children's Corner was located within Fergus Falls. We had two separate buildings in the community. The Fergus Falls Public School District purchased a new building. Actually, it was the former Target building. There was a Target that closed, and Fergus Falls Public Schools purchased that building. I was invited as somebody to be a co-partner moving into the school building and moving our childcare facility within that school building. As of last April, so not even a year ago, we made the move. I sold two buildings, two smaller buildings, and we moved into the larger building, and we are now co-located in something that's called Lincoln School. It is a Fergus Falls Public School building. That move made it affordable for us to at least add more families so that we could go to the response of that Otter Tail community. We were caring for 32 children, but we are now up to 64 children with that move. And I am licensed in that new building for 82 children. So we do have that opportunity to expand even more than where we are right now. At the time of the move, which was a crazy time because, of course, it all happened. When did we move? Kind of mid-pandemic, which was, as I agree with everybody else who's testified today, a crazy time for childcare providers. We have the ups and downs that everybody else dealt with. But in the middle of that, I'm moving two buildings into one location so that we could expand and help serve the community in a better way. In doing so, though, I found that there were no grants, there was no additional dollars, and there was no money that I could draw from to help with some of the costs that it would take to do something like that. So the sale of my two buildings was helping me to make that move. At the same time, I did have to increase my rates in order to make our ends meet to pay rent that we will be paying for a school district building. So we are currently in this new building. It is a unique, one-of-a-kind early childhood building. Right now, it is Children's Corner. We're co-located with Fergus Falls Public School. All of their early childhood programming is in that building. So we have an entire building dedicated to ages birth through 4 years or 5 years old. I know that there's still more of the building that Fergus Falls is going to expand, and there's a possibility of adding kindergarten classrooms as well. Again, it's a one of a kind, very unique building. It is beautiful. The renovations have made it possible for us to expand, to invite more families to enjoy the care that we provide. Moving into the PERM situation, 10 years ago, I actually approached the head of the hospital, the CEO of the hospital, because PERM Hospital was moving to a brand new building at that point. Their old building was going to be renovated. It is attached to PERM Living, which is their elderly care facility. And I've always had a passion and wanted to do intergenerational activities and be part of an intergenerational building. And so about 10 years ago, again, before the conversation started about partnering, I made the decision to partner with PERM Living as well. So we do have a small center in PERM right now. We are partnered with PERM Living. We have been able to enjoy and have a great time with the elderly residents there. Our young children get to, well, they used to before pandemic, be able to visit them on a daily basis. We had activities that we would do together, watching movies, barbecuing, you name it, we did it. So that has been a wonderful opportunity. At the same time, there is additional space right across the hall from us that is available, and we could expand.
And I'm just, Ms. Stefke, I'm just going to have to ask you to wrap up pretty quick if you can. Sorry, I just want to make sure we can get to our next testifier and get to questions, et cetera.
Sure, so, absolutely.
Thank you.
The opportunity to expand in PERM is there for us. But again, dollars like these would make it available for us to go ahead and expand. We could double our space and double our capacity if we had the opportunity to expand, as we're already partnering with community members. So thank you.
Thank you so much, and thanks for your important work. Appreciate it. Representative Pryor, I know your hand is up. I'm inclined to go to our final testifier and then call on you if I can. I see you nodding, so we'll do that. Ms. Schreiger, maybe you can help me pronounce your last name, but please identify yourself and proceed.
No problem. Good morning. Thank you, Chair Pinto, and members of the committee for allowing me to speak to you this morning. My name is Ann Schweigel. I represent Minnesota Farmers Union as their vice president, and I am also a grain and livestock producer in Big Stone County in western Minnesota, where I believe Representative Olson has her roots. I've been farming with my husband for 9 years. We also have two young children, and my story will sound very similar to some of the earlier testifiers this morning. And our sparsely populated, but not to mention aging rural community, accessing childcare has been a battle for our young family. We had our first child shortly after we returned home to begin transitioning into the family farming operation. It was the dream of my husband and I to set down deep roots and start a family in rural Minnesota, to develop a deep sense of community, and to start our own business in agriculture. After the first year and a half of staying home with our daughter, the needs of our burgeoning farm business made it clear that we needed a regular, reliable childcare for her. For months, we struggled to find adequate childcare. We were told that we would have had to have started looking for slots and putting ourselves on wait lists for daycare centers while we were still pregnant with our daughter, if not earlier. Thankfully, we found an in-home option for our daughter, our then toddler, but it required a 28-mile round-trip drive twice a day to get to and from daycare pickup and drop-off. According to the Big Stone County Commissioner's Office, Big Stone County has a 1.9% unemployment rate, which is great, but according to their office, one of the biggest impediments to economic growth in our area is lack of accessible childcare. It's hard to raise a family and work at the same time without access to childcare. The local elevators and hospitals continually run ads in our local newspapers looking for folks to fill good-paying jobs. Jobs that you could raise a family on, but for lack of childcare and housing in our area. I urge the committee members to support House File 3169 and to increase access to quality childcare options for our rural communities. There are good jobs in greater Minnesota that we can't fill. Thank you for having me, and I'll be available if you have any questions. I know that we're getting close on time here this morning.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, Ms. Schreigel. Thanks for being with us today. So we'll go to Representative Pryor first. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And really, I think that this is a question that I can follow up later on, but I would love to hear from Ms. Tenek Stackey. I think I just butchered your last name. I apologize. More about how you're co-located with your child care center with an early childhood in a school district. So I thought that was, I would love to hear more about that, but probably at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, as long as we have Ms. Stafke, if you can, maybe Ms. Stafke, can you give us just a sort of 60 seconds on how that works?
Absolutely. So we are renters. We pay rent to the school district to be there. And I was able to work with the architect to design the part of the building that would be childcare. And I worked with the school district throughout the entire project. We worked together as partnership and as a team in designing the building. And so it is set up and designed for early childhood in the way that it fits the best. I pay rent. I pay a portion of the utilities. So that's kind of how we work. Our parents come into the building, just like all the parents do. We have access to everything, and they would have access to go to the public school preschool program as well during the day if they wanted to. So therefore, we're in one location. It's a one-stop shopping educational event is what it is. And
super cool.
But we provide childcare for full days.
Thank you. Representative Pryor.
Just a quick follow-up. Do you have the younger children and then the preschool children is the 3 and 4 year olds? You have 3 and younger, or do some parents choose the older program or the school-based program and others choose your program? How does that work?
Ms. Daphne.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Pinto and Vice Chair Pryor for the question. We actually provide care for ages 6 weeks all the way through the first day of school, so up to 5 years old. The public school has preschool for 3, 4, and 5s. So while we have a preschool room, they also are doing formal preschool. Parents may choose one, may choose the other, may choose both. It's totally a parent choice on what they want. They may stay within our preschool room all day and not go to the preschool provided by the school district. At the same time, they might come for us for half a day and then go to the school district. It's a matter of choice, and we work with parents on those choices.
Thank you, Ms. Stafke. Thank you, Representative Pryor. Representative Wasilik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who this question would be best for. Maybe Ms. Baldwin could speak to this, as she mentioned some partnerships with businesses. But I'm really, so one thing that I continue to ask, and I've never really gotten a great answer to, is like, what are businesses doing about this issue? So obviously, smaller businesses probably can't afford to be, like paying for childcare for employees or providing a subsidy or something. But I'm still curious as to when the top two issues are housing and affordable childcare that employers are saying they're hearing or that their issues, what is actually being done by employers, whether it's in partnership or not. I think it's great for the state to invest in these resources and helping childcare be more affordable. But I'm also interested to know what the business community is doing about the issue. Thank you.
Seems like that may, thank you, Representative Wasilik, that may be a Mr. McMahon question. Yep, indeed so. So, Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wasilik. Great question. Every community is different as what's happening, but every community is doing things. I think the best one that I can raise up right now is the city of Spicer. A couple years ago, they benefited from a $50,000 D child care grant from the program you guys all know about. They were able to leverage over $900,000 in local money from businesses committing significant contributions, committing that they will, kind of take X number of slots in that childcare facility so that they know that they have the demand there, all the way down to a grandma was knitting baby blankets and selling them to make contributions to this project. So those are the kind of things that we see happening. In every one of the communities that I can tell you about that conversations there, business is at the table. We're just trying to figure out how we can get the right public-private partnerships to make these things work. Our local communities, whether they're cities, counties, or school districts, as you've heard from our testifier today, want to play a role in that. Our local businesses want to play a role in that. We just need, that last tool in the toolbox to make things work.
Okay, Representative Wasilik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate that actual, like, concrete example. That's sort of what I've been looking for, and I really appreciate that example. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Boswick. Representative Cotizzo-Batun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing Representative Olson's bill before us for an informational hearing today. And Representative Olson, thank you so much for your work in this on this issue. And I know that you are also a young mom to a young child, and that's an issue that's near and dear to your heart. I just wanted to point out how sometimes in the whole realm of childcare and workforce and everything, it can really be portrayed as this rural urban issue. And I just wanted to share a very personal connection that I have to today's hearing, because although I represent the city of Eden Prairie and live here in the metro with my husband and our four children, we are landowners in Otter Tail County. And my husband was born and raised in the Hewitt area. My niece, her husband is from Perham. They are 24 years old. They have a 8-month-old child. They've actually just recently left the area for a temporary stint for work. But it is so fun and really buoying to me as somebody who is connected to that community there with family still in the area to hear Fergus and Perham. And I mean, then these communities who are struggling mightily and are working through and finding creative solutions for childcare. And while sometimes it may seem like those of us who live in the metro area aren't necessarily in tune to the challenges of greater Minnesota, we are so much more connected than we all might imagine. And so I appreciate having the opportunity to have this conversation today and really learn about some of the really wonderful and creative solutions that the team up in your area is implementing. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Cotizzo-Batun. So we're going to close with Chair Dabney and then giving the bill's author as well. Chair Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the powerful hearing today. It's been a great learning opportunity. Representative Olson, I think you've got an important bill here, and I thank you for bringing it forward. But Mr. Chair, I'm struck by the continuity between our hearing on Tuesday and this hearing today, and Representative Bernardi's bill to make the 4,000 voluntary pre-K slots permanent. And I spoke then about what the loss of those seats would mean to greater Minnesota, where we have such a challenge providing childcare from the private sector. And in many cases, it's the school district that is the sole provider that's reliable, affordable, and quality in some of our smaller communities around the state. And, you know, Ms. Baldwin from Otter Tail said it right, childcare doesn't work from a private business perspective. And I think this hearing today reinforces the importance of making those 4,000 seats permanent. Moving forward on that, we can pretend that a private sector approach works. It needs to, at a minimum, be both and making those seats permanent would be part of that. So I just was struck by the continuity between Tuesday and today. Thank you for this hearing. Thank you again, Representative Olson, for the bill.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. And actually, before I hand things to Representative Olson, that makes me think that both and point that we often are pitching different forms of early care and learning spending against one another, voluntary pre-K versus CCAP versus early learning scholarships. And it was struck you regarding those pre-K slots. It struck me as well. Struck me about the importance of CCAP in these communities. We certainly know there's strong support. This topic of early learning scholarships wasn't brought up, but I know that it will be in other hearings. And boy, we do need a both-and approach when it comes to early care and learning throughout our state. There's just massive, massive, massive need. Can't state that enough. So Representative Olson, you're the bill's author. Wrap us up.
All right. Well, thank you all. This was a great hearing, and thank you to the testifiers. I do have roots in Ortonville and in Fergus Falls with my dad retiring from there. So, but bringing it home, I will just say that I think I completely agree with Representative Dabney. It's we need to do a lot, and especially in greater Minnesota. And until we're able to fix what the original presenter kind of laid out with the approaches in making decisions about what is our child care like in the state of Minnesota, this is what greater Minnesota needs, as you heard from testifiers. And, you know, this is a $500,000 grant that would require a match to Representative Wasilewicz, and I'm a part of lots of conversations in Duluth with the business community about how we work together on that. And I'll just say, this is what I actually wanted to say too, is they didn't know this bill hearing is happening, but there's actually a group of people from Duluth coming down to the Capitol today to talk about childcare and talk about the ways that businesses want to step up and support that. So if any of you legislators see them out and about today, know that they're here to also be advocating for bills like this because they want to step forward and help. So just want to say thank you again to the testifiers and to the chair for a great committee hearing, and just thank you for your support of this legislation.
Thank you, Representative Olson, and we'll wish you good luck in the committee. This bill is in the possession of Capital Investment, and perhaps we may end up seeing it, but I'm delighted to have it there. This has been a great hearing. I want to thank everyone who's put it together. Members, next Tuesday, we will have three bills up, so keep an eye out for that, and then I think several more on Thursday. And appreciate all that. I'm not seeing any hands, and so with that, our meeting is adjourned.